Maddox, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Marie Maddox, counsel for the appellant, and we're here before the court to challenge the trial court's granting a summary judgment on some claims, granting directed verdict on others, and to challenge and to see if we could possibly get an in-bank review from the 11th Circuit of the Terry versus Cook case. And I'll start with that premise. The district court had granted summary judgment based on Terry versus Cook, and this was based on what we had claimed was a political association claim where Mr. Raybon had supported an alternative candidate to the incumbent. And in the Cutcliffe case, the court recognized that and actually had suggested and said that maybe that Terry versus Cook needed an in-bank review because it may be inconsistent with the Branty case from the U.S. Supreme Court. And so we had preserved that argument, and we had facts to suggest that Mr. Raybon's demotion from a captain position to a deputy position in November of 2016.
Do you concede you lose the political retaliation claim based on our precedent of Cutcliffe?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Do you concede that you lose the political retaliation claim based on what we said in Cutcliffe?
I would, Your Honor, and I would say that.
You just want us to, you want that case to go en banc?
I do.
Lots of lawyers have wanted that case to go en banc.
Yes, sir, and maybe we'll be fortunate enough that this would be the one that the court would accept for an en banc review. But I will move on to another argument because I understand that both the district court and this court are bound by Terry versus Cook, and we're trying to get an en banc review. Yes, sir. Your Honor, my second argument is that the trial court erred by failing to find that some of the disclosures that Mr. Raybon made during his employment were not protected under the First Amendment. And what the court ruled was that a large number of the disclosures that he had made were made as an employee versus as a private citizen. And
tell us the ones that you think the district court erred on when the district court found those statements were not matters of public concern, because it looks to me like, looking at all of the statements that are challenged, seems to me your client was either acting within the scope of his duties or he was furthering private interests. I don't see any matter of public concern in any of the statements. So you tell us which ones you say comply with that requirement under Pickering.
Yes, sir. One was the Billy Benton, where Mr. Benton had disclosed to his brother, David Benton, who was associated with someone who was going to be arrested. And Billy Benton disclosed to his brother that there was going to be an arrest, which then allowed Maurice Wilson to go and hide the gun, and so not to essentially avoid an arrest. And that was one, the Billy Benton and David Benton matter. The second was on Bradley Fellows, who was an employee under another captain, not under Mr. Raybon, which is important. And he reported that Bradley Fellows was using methamphetamine and had lied on his employment application about having had prior drug abuse treatment.
Why wouldn't that be within the scope of his duties to report something like that?
No, sir. And our argument is, and I would rely on the Corallo case from the 11th Circuit 2016, and also the Pouillon case, and that was decided by this court in 2015. And in the Pouillon case, the police officer had acted as a private citizen when he complained to the mayor and city council members that the chief and assistant chief of police had obstructed justice, mishandled contraband, and used excessive force. And just because you're a police officer does not mean that you can't report wrongdoing within your agency. And if the Pouillon case, where you have a law enforcement officer...
I don't disagree with that, but why wasn't that part of his duties as a police officer to report something like that?
Well,
that's not a matter of public concern, is it? It's a responsibility he has working in that department to report that.
Well, the same could be argued then in the Corallo case, that the city manager had an obligation to report wrongdoing by city council members. And the same could be argued with the Pouillon case, that the police officer, just because he was reporting wrongdoing, that that would be part of his job duties. Here, Mr. Raybon, as a captain, not over Mr. Fellows, and I think that's significant. He was not responsible for the employment of Mr. Fellows. That was under Captain Edwards. And Mr. Raybon had reported his methamphetamine use, and he had reported that he had lied on his employment application about having prior drug abuse treatment. So I do not believe, and this would be under the ordinary job duties under Lane versus Frank, would it be part of his ordinary job duties to report a lie on an employment application? And it would not be part of his normal job duties. The third would be the Jeremy Branch matter. And this was, Donnie Branch was the second in command. He was the chief deputy under the sheriff. And he had reported that there had been evidence that was destroyed, and actually had that it would, the whole arrest of Jeremy Branch had been eliminated from the system, and that Mr. Raybon had gone to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and actually had reported that this whole incident had been swept away, that there was no evidence of him ever having been arrested, and it would not be part of his ordinary job duties under Lane to have reported that the son, who was also happened to be a sitting city commissioner or county commissioner, that he had been arrested and that all of the records regarding that arrest had been eliminated.
So I agree with you that that's not part of his ordinary job duties, but here's my concern about that. And maybe you can correct me. Maybe I have a mistaken understanding of the record. My understanding is that there's not, I don't know if there's evidence, whether, is there evidence in the record with respect to his having gone to the FDLE?
Yes,
okay, and is there evidence that, and let me ask you where it is, but also, is there evidence that the defendants in this case knew that he went to the FDLE before they made the decisions in controversy?
There is not direct evidence, no ma'am. I cannot represent.
We don't need direct evidence, but is there any evidence?
There's evidence that the attitude towards him changed. This was in July of 2014. And after
he, but didn't the individuals indicate that they didn't know about the report to the FDLE?
They did. They said that, but the problem with that is that there's a disputed issue of material fact on that issue. And that is that the attitude began to change against him. He was demoted or moved into the cold case position in February of 2015. These reports about Mr. Branch, about Jeremy Branch, were in July, I think it was July 14th that he was interviewed by FDLE. And then you have all of the other incidents that begin to happen between July 2014 and I believe the date was January 13, 2015, when he sent an email about whether Mr. Bradley Fellows should have been prosecuted. And there's an error in our brief where we say we use the December 14 date on the Bradley Fellows matter, and we say it's a matter of weeks. There's actually a shortened time period. It is a matter of weeks because his report on Bradley Fellows to try to get Mr. Fellows prosecuted by the state attorney's office was actually January of 2015, and he is demoted or transferred into the cold case position, taken from his captain position, transferred to work one case. All of his duties and responsibilities are removed from the drug task force, from the Criminal Investigations Division. That was within a matter of weeks of him asking that Bradley Fellows be prosecuted.
Is there anything in the record that undermines the legitimate reason that the defendants gave for engaging in those actions?
There was, and that was my argument on the directed verdict. If I could just finish wanting to add one more thing, Justice Davina, to the issue about what he had reported that we believe was still covered under the First Amendment, the asking for the criminal prosecution was a big deal. And when he requested, and that is found on pages 124, 125 of the transcript, and there was an email that was sent by a subordinate employee, and we never got the email in discovery that Mr. Raybon sent around that same time period requesting that criminal action be taken against Bradley Fellows for the perjury. But he discussed it on pages 124 and 125 during his testimony, that he had actually sent an email up the chain of command requesting that Bradley Fellows be prosecuted. So that would be another matter that should have been protected by the First Amendment. And, Your Honor, going to the directed verdict issue, yes, there was testimony that was on the three issues that the court allowed to go forward and on the whistleblower claim, because the First Amendment was not even allowed, the First Amendment claims were not even allowed to go forward at all. But on the three whistleblower claims where we're claiming that the court had erred in granting a directed verdict, there was competing evidence to show that the people who had complained about him, because the whole issue became whether this was just a business decision by the sheriff to remove Mr. Raybon from his position either in February, March of 2015 or later in November of 2016. And all of the people who had testified against him were people that he had either complained about. Well, they were, I think, exclusively people that he had complained about.
But wasn't that part of the problem? I mean, didn't the sheriff originally give him the benefit of the doubt when he went to the sheriff and said, I have these investigators working for me, I'm having trouble with three of them, and the sheriff looked at it and said, well, they've been complaining about you as well, but I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. But look, you can hire more investigators, but if you continue to have these problems, then I may have to re-examine my decision. I mean, did that not occur?
I see that my time has expired. May I?
And of course, answer the question. Thank you.
Yes, there were people who complained, but the complaints that were made, every one of those was refuted. For example, Mr. Edwards complained, and he was the person who Mr. Raybon was bringing up the subordinate employees and saying that some of his subordinate employees were violating the law. Every one of those complaints were refuted during the trial. For example, when Mr. Edwards brought up that he was having difficulties, could not work with other agencies, then we brought the police chief in from the city of Marianna. We brought folks in from other agencies to show that all of those claims, every claim that had been made against him, was wrong. So when you take an employee who has been there for 20 years or so, 15, 20 years, with a spotless record, and then you all of a sudden transfer him to a cold case position where he's responsible for one case rather than the gigantic responsibilities he had in his captain position, and then essentially demote him four levels down. And we have evidence to suggest and show that it was only the people who he had complained against or their one supervisor. Then doesn't that create a factual issue for the jury? Should that have been taken away from the jury? And that's the argument that I made below.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you've reserved 4 minutes for rebuttal, Ms. Maddox. Mr. Evans.
Please, Court. Wayne Evans for Sheriff Roberts. Just to start with the last points that were made by counsel with regard to refuting the particular points that had been brought up about Raybon and the issues that had been brought to the sheriff's attention, and like, that's not the point. That's not why the sheriff moved Raybon. What is undisputed, which was recognized by the district court, was that there was turmoil. It didn't matter who was right or who was wrong. It was readily apparent to the sheriff that there had been turnover in the drug task force for years. Branch testified that. That was never refuted. And that there was ongoing dissension in the drug task force. He didn't have that problem with Edwards. He didn't have that problem in CID with Virgil. He had a localized problem in the drug task force with this ongoing dissension. Recap very briefly, and it's apparent from the record. They're at the airport headquarters for the drug task force. He moves them 2013 because he's got the squabbling. Sheriff wants to get more involved. 2013, there were four detectives. He moves three out of the four, including Judd Allen, who was the subject of the whistleblower complaint, May or June of, 2013. Doesn't move Allen, doesn't move any of the others, moves three out of the four.
And then he replaces them with people that the plaintiff wanted replaced.
And they do. Three, he replaces them.
How many of those complained? Once those new ones come on board, how many of those then complain? These are people the plaintiff wants, as I understand it.
Two out of the three. He replaces three. It's his selections. He makes the selections, as he did throughout Drug Task Force when he was the captain. He replaces three. And two out of them, Rolf Smith, Steve Smith, they're not the subject of any whistleblower complaints. 6 months after the sheriff trades these people out, two of them are complaining about similar issues. Mood swings, managerial style, being isolated in DTF. And now it's at the same time he's got an issue with Edwards. Now, this is before there's any protected activity alleged, you know, with regard to whistleblower. That's not till like May of 2016. So he's got two captains that are squabbling on this video. And he's got two out of the three that were replaced that are now complaining about the captain of the drug task force. What's he to do? He moves Rabin because he had told him before, hey, if this doesn't work out, then we're going to go in a different direction. And he did. He moved Rabin out, but he didn't demote him. He didn't cut his pay. He utilized his skills. He was an investigator, so he moves him into a position where he can be a captain and then use his investigative skills, but he would not supervise anybody because that was the heart of the problem. It wasn't who was right or wrong. It was the dissension and the turmoil, and that was undisputed.
Let me ask you this. I want to kind of turn you to something that bothered me a little bit after hearing opposing counsel's argument. Clearly, on the political retaliation, you win based on our precedent of Cutcliffe, and she's conceded that.
Right.
But go to the First Amendment claims and whether or not this speech is a matter of public concern. She gave, if I wrote them down correctly, at least four examples where she says those items of speech really did concern a matter of public concern. I want you to tell us why they did not.
I would, and I'd like to begin with Carollo because I think Carollo really sets this up in terms of why it's different. You know, Carollo, you've got a city manager that goes to local and state law enforcement about campaign finance violations, clearly something that's not within the ordinary scope of duties and outside the workplace. That's context is important, you know, and that was an important fact in the court's decision in Carollo. This is completely different. You've got John Allen, and let's begin with that. John Allen is, according to Rabin, compromising a search warrant that's being executed by the drug task force. He's captain of the drug task force, and so he's complaining about a member of the agency that's tipping off the suspects of a search warrant. That's obviously something that's tied to his ordinary duties. You would expect a captain of the drug task force to go to the sheriff and say, John Allen, a member of this agency, is tipping off suspects. That's completely different. It's within the workplace. It's within the scope of his duties. Billy Benton. Billy Benton is a member of the agency. There was an ongoing investigation, Maurice Wilson. It was a joint investigation between Drug Task Force and Sneed's Police Department. And according to Rabin, Benton talked to his brother who may have tipped off Wilson. And that is clearly, again, within the workplace, related to his duties. It's an ongoing investigation in which DTF is involved, clearly distinguished, you know, from Carollo.
What about Ms. Maddox's statement that she did not supervise, that he did not supervise this individual?
It wouldn't matter. I mean, if anybody within the agency is compromising one of his investigations, he's got an obligation to tell that to the sheriff. It wouldn't matter. If you're going to think about whether or not he's speaking as a citizen or whether he's speaking as an employee, when you look at the context of this, it obviously falls on the employee side, not on the citizen side. He's not going to the mayor, right? He's not going to the county commission. He's going to the sheriff about an internal matter. It's work-related.
What if he's just another deputy sheriff and he goes and reports it?
I think a deputy would be the same thing. I think a deputy would have an obligation to tell the sheriff about criminal conduct or misconduct on the part of another deputy.
So there's no protection. If you have a corrupt police department and you've got a deputy sheriff who's trying to do the right thing, there's no whistleblower protection in that situation.
Whistleblower or First Amendment?
Whistleblower.
Okay. Well, I think there's an argument for whistleblower where there's no argument for First Amendment. You know, that it depends, again, whether it's in writing or whether it's verbal. You know, did he go to the sheriff and say, Sheriff, Billy Benton talked to his brother about this investigation with regard to Maurice Wilson. He goes to the sheriff and he tells the sheriff. That's not protected. That's not protected. But if the sheriff reached out to him or there was an ongoing investigation or an inquiry, then he was requested to participate in an inquiry, and that would be protected. Okay, so again, context matters. Bradley Fellows.
But let me ask you something. I understand what you're saying, but it seems like also, wouldn't it also be a matter of public concern if you've got a corrupt, I'm not suggesting that's the situation here. I don't in any way mean to suggest that this was a corrupt police department.
Right.
But if you have, in a hypothetical, a corrupt police department and you've got a deputy who is trying to do the right thing,
right.
What is he to do?
Go outside the agency if that was the case. Let's take Bradley Fellows. Jeremy Branch is a better example, okay, because I haven't got to him. So let me talk about Jeremy Branch. Let's suppose Raven goes not just to Travis Lawson, who's like a coworker. He's on the drug task force, right? Lawson in his deposition said that he and Raven were good friends. They often talked about issues relating to Jackson County Sheriff's Office. But let's say Raven doesn't go to Travis Lawson, he goes to the Office of Executive Investigations, or he goes to the County Commission, or he goes to the governor. Context matters. I do not believe that if a deputy reports to the sheriff misconduct involving another member of the agency, that's First Amendment protected because it is within the ordinary duties. You would expect a deputy to go to the head of the agency with regard to policy violations and potential criminal misconduct. You know, the First Amendment doesn't protect everything that might be of interest to the public.
Of course, but it does protect matters of public concern, and a corrupt police department, it seems to me, would be a matter of public concern.
Well, then I think
I realize that some things can fall into both categories,
yeah.
And that's where it becomes a little difficult. Maybe you can help us with drawing the line.
Yeah, and I think our city drew that line.
It did, but it's as clear as it probably can be, but it's not.
Well, you know, I think Garcetti, Alvis, and the King opinions that were decided by the court have given us factors that should be examined by the court in determining is this speech as an employee or is this speech as a citizen? And a couple of the factors that are critically important, was it made public? Was it outside the workplace or inside the workplace? And, you know, Alvis, for example, you know, you've got these psychologists that are complaining about management. You've got, with regard to King, a public safety issue with regard to a firefighter who doesn't have medical clearance. She called it public safety, but nonetheless, the court said, no, this is an internal matter. It's work-related. And I think ultimately that's the inquiry by the court, given all the factors. Is it work-related? And I would submit to you that in every instance that we have here, it was work-related because of, again, within the workplace, he goes to Travis Lawson, who was like a coworker on the drug task force with whom he had confided other matters, who was a good friend. It's work-related. If I may, I'll just touch on the reorganization because that was also, as you know, part of the judgment as a matter of law. And here's Raven, who has been moved to a position as a captain, supervising nobody, but he's being paid as a captain's salary. But things change as far as the sheriff is concerned, and that's the budget. That testimony is undisputed that his finance director, Linda Cowan, told him he's got a problem with the budget because they had asked for $191,000 more than what they got. Appellant's position is that there was actually more money in salary from one year to the next. Well, as Cowan explained, that was because the year before, county commission had given pay raises. It didn't mean that they had more to work with. As Cowan testified, operational expenses were down. Capital outlay was down from the year before. They eliminated the contingency reserve. Branch testified she was worried about whether or not they were going to meet their budget for the following year. Both Roberts and Cowan testified that she related her concerns to him. And as the district judge pointed out, here's a captain who's supervising nobody, who is essentially a luxury. Sheriff doesn't need three captains, he only needs two. That really is undisputed testimony with regard to the budgetary issues and his reliance upon Cowan's concerns with regard to the budget. He reorganized, he decided to put more people on the road, and he basically cut a financial liability. He cut a captain that he really was not in a position to afford. The position of the appellant is that there were other opportunities for the sheriff, that he could have moved Virgil Watson, he could have done something with Edwards, that he didn't have to do this. He didn't have to spend money on vehicles, for example. But as the district judge noted, it's not the authority, it's not the responsibility of a federal judge or a jury to second guess a sheriff, a decision maker, on those managerial decisions. No reasonable jury could have found for the plaintiff with regard to these facts. I'll be happy to answer any other questions or concerns.
I thought the basis of Judge Henkel granting judgment as a matter of law was he found the plaintiff did not carry the burden of showing pretext. Wasn't that the basis of it?
If you go through the order on the judgment as a matter of law, he explains clearly the move from drug task force to the cold case position and the reorganization. And going to your point, Judge, that there was no pretext because that was really never in doubt, that it was never disputed. So to your point, yes, that the plaintiff never really disputed, as I indicated at the beginning of my argument, the dissension within the drug task force and also the sheriff's need, based upon the budgetary issues, to cut a captain that he really did not need to afford anymore and reorganize the agency. So to your point, yes. If there are other questions from the court, I'll be happy to address them. Thank you. We request that you affirm the order on both the summary judgment and also the judgment as a matter of law.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Ms. Maddox.
The legal standard on a directed verdict is whether, viewed in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, that the evidence points overwhelmingly in favor of one party such that reasonable people could not arrive at a contrary verdict. The question in this case before this court is whether there was evidence that would show that the pretext, and Judge Davina, you're absolutely right, this is...
Well, I did make one misstatement, though. I thought I used the term judgment as a matter of law. It was a directed verdict.
Yes, sir.
At the close of the plaintiff's case.
Yes, sir, it was. And the question...
There's a difference.
Yes, sir, there is. And what the question is whether, though, there was enough evidence from which a jury could reasonably have found in his favor, and whether the evidence so overwhelmingly pointed in favor of one party. And by we brought in witnesses to show that every claim that had been made against him was flawed, and that Scotty Edwards, the other who he had been reporting wrongdoing about, Mr. Edwards and folks that were under his supervision, and that everything was instigated by Scotty Edwards. And the people that he did bring in that were new folks, the Smith folks, Rolf Smith, there was one issue that they had been asked to prepare a report about. And they did prepare a report about it. But that doesn't mean that he has ongoing problems with them. And all of these folks, it was all instigated by Scotty Edwards. So was there enough evidence to show that? and to show that every claim, if the sheriff had fully investigated any of these claims, would have found that not one allegation against Scott, against Joey Rayburn was true. We had other people who came in that testified that this event didn't happen, that event didn't happen, kicking a trash can, for example, didn't happen. I mean, we brought in the evidence to show that those were just not true. Had the sheriff done any investigation, and the sheriff knew that he was reporting these folks. Second, John Allen, Eppley has argued that John Allen and whether it was within his job duties to report this. I'm not arguing that one. The ones that I brought up were what I brought to the court's attention about Mr. Fellows, et cetera, but I did not bring John Allen up. That one I think could arguably have been within his job duties because Mr. Allen had been under his supervision. Budget shortfalls and the justification that the sheriff gave, we brought the actual budgets in to show that the categories where they were claiming that there was a budget shortfall was just plain false. And we brought that evidence before the jury to show that where they were claiming that the salaries that was low from 1 year to the next year, and that this is why it was justified that he would be removed from the captain position, we brought the evidence in to show that that was false. That was, again, a jury issue. And that fell on the heels of Mr. Rayburn having reported Scotty Edwards, a year and a half of him being harassed by Scotty Edwards, people ignoring him, him not being able to go to attend meetings, captain meetings. He was essentially became the pariah after he had been moved to the cold case position in early 2015. Matter of public concern, we have cited cases in our brief, Pouillon case, Cooper, Fikes, Phillips, and cited all of those cases in our brief saying that corruption within a police department is certainly a matter of public concern and that the law, in fact, was clearly established, which the court had found also the law was not clearly established back in the 2015-16 time period. And we cited Cooper, Fikes, and Phillips for the proposition that it was. Work-related is not the issue because the U.S. Supreme Court and this court have recognized that you learn about these events during the course of your employment and that just because it arises during work does not mean that you don't still continue to have First Amendment protection. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. All right, the next case is Davis versus Edwards.